claim?
Yes.
How many of you don't have? You don't have? How many share you have? Two of them don't have. Yes, anybody got extra copies? Yes, try to share. Have you given your email contact there, but it's not? Give it. Brilliant result.
I put one extra.
Ah, yeah. You want to comment? One extra, yeah. You can share. Okay. Now, we've covered six chapters of the Gita. And let us look at the three main topics which were covered in the first six chapters. As you all know, the Gita is divided into three sections of six chapters. So what was the important part about the first six chapters? The first is the emphasis was on Jiva Swarupa, as you can see in your charts there. Jiva Swarupa means we were told about the nature of the individual, the nature of the Jiva. And what was it pointed out to us? That the individual is not, when we talk about the individual, we are not talking about the body, we are not talking about the mind or the senses, but what are we talking about? The essence of the individual is the Atman, is the consciousness. So that was the first important thing that was pointed out. And this Atma is contained in the body. Therefore, the body is a container in which the Atman resides. And that is called Sachit Ananda. The Atma in the body is known as the Sachit Ananda. And this was elaborately discussed by Krishna, what is the nature of this Atman. If you go back to chapter 2, from the very important verses 12 to 25. Page number 30. So here when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, the first thing that Krishna told him was about the nature of this Atman. And from verses 12 to 25, he gave him all the qualities of Atman. That Atman is eternal, Atman is all-pervading, Atman is the witness in the body, Atman does not, is the non-doer, he does not do any actions, it only witnesses all the actions. Whereas the body is temporary, the body is limited, the body is the one that does all the actions, and the body is the one that receives the results of all the actions. So the nature of the Atman was elaborately explained in chapter 2. Then the second topic that was emphasized in the first six chapters is what is the sadhana of the individual? What is our sadhana? And the emphasis was on karma yoga. Karma yoga is a very important spiritual sadhana which was mentioned to us in the very important verse. Can you remember in chapter 2 which verse was it was? The seed verse of karma yoga. The essence of karma yoga was given by Krishna to Arjuna. Chapter 2 verse 47. Karma neva nikaraste ma padeshu kadachana. Ma karma palahetu bhur ma de sambhoske karma. Your right is to action. You have the right to action. You have free will to choose the choice of your action. Therefore, having the choice to choose your action, you better choose wisely. But what you don't have a right to? So the result of that. You cannot dictate the result of the action. You can have a goal, you can have an objective, but whether that goal is reached is not in your control. Therefore, since the action is in your control, choose your action. The result is not in your control, what should you do?
Surrender
the result to God and accept it. So karma yoga was one of the very important sadhanas, and also not only it is chapter 2, verse 47, but the whole of chapter 3, the Karma Yoga Sadhana was elaborated. That's why chapter 3 itself is called Karma Yoga. Now, therefore, to summarize, Karma Yoga is what? Proper action plus proper attitude. Right action plus right attitude equals Karma Yoga. Not only doing the right action, we should have the right attitude. And what is that attitude? Every action is Ishvara Arpanam. Every action is a worship of the Lord. Just like I offer flowers at the altar to Lord, mentally I should consider that every action I'm doing is like offering a flower to the Lord. My action becomes an offering to the Lord. And just like every offering to the Lord, when you finish your prayer, you get prasadam. Therefore, my attitude towards the result should be what? Ishvara prasadam. I should accept favorable, I should accept unfavorable as Ishvara prasadam. So, attitude of Karma Yoga is Ishvara arpanam and Ishvara prasadam. Proper action plus proper attitude. And then the third topic that was discussed was Purusha Prayatana. Purusha Prayatana means, now, many people think and accept that the law of karma is fatalism. So people say that my life is all predetermined, right? So what is the use of my effort? Right? So what is the use of my effort? But this is what we call fatalism, to just say that, accept that this is my fate and I should accept it. Now, if the present, what is the present? The scripture is telling us that the present is a result of the past. So, if the present is a result of the past, what is the future? It is a result of the present. The future is a result of the present, meaning the action you choose to do. So, therefore, take charge and be responsible for that. So, there are four what we call goals given to us in the scriptures: Dharma, Kama, Artha, Moksha, and all these four are valid goals that we should pursue. Dharma meaning all kinds of prayers and rituals that we do. Kama means whatever desires we want to satisfy. Artha is all kinds of possessions that we want to gain. And eventually we have to come to moksha, which is the ultimate goal. So we have freedom to choose which are the goals we want to give priority. Do we want to give priority in our life to only karma and artha, or do we want to also pursue dharma and moksha? We have the right to choose what are the priorities of goals we want to have. So that's why this freedom has been given, and not to everything in creation, but only to who? Only to human beings. Right? We have been given the greatest gift of freedom to choose our action. So we should not abuse that. And that was told to us very beautifully in chapter 6, verses 5 and 6. That Purusha Prayatana means putting yourself effort. You have every right to uplift yourself. And who is going to help you uplift yourself?
Yourself.
You yourself are going to help yourself to uplift yourself. Nobody else is going to help you. So in this chapter 6 verses 5 and 6, page 115, so what did Krishna say there? Let a man lift himself by himself. Let him not degrade himself, for the self alone is the friend of the self, and the self alone is the enemy of the self. Meaning that if you have the right discipline in your life, if you are able to discipline your body, your mind, your intellect in the right direction, you yourself become your own friend. But if you are unable to discipline this mind, this body, this intellect, you become your worst enemy. You end up destroying yourself. So understand, you have been given the right to choose your course of action. You have all the equipment. You have the body, you have the intellect, you have the mind. How you choose to use it, the goals you set, you are going to enjoy or you are going to suffer. There is nobody else to blame for. Of course, again, the karma of the past will play a role, but one should not just surrender to that and say, my karma is like that, what can I do? Whatever I do, my karma is going to be like that. So what Krishna wants to say here, don't take that attitude. Understand, you have the right to put in that effort to break out of that, what we call the past karmas. So those are the three main important points that were discussed in the first six chapters. That is what? Jiva Swarupa, nature of the Atman, Karma Yoga as the sadhana, and Purusha Prayatana, which means self-effort, must be put. That is very important. Now, what are the three main important topics in the middle six chapters? Since the first six chapters spoke about the nature of the individual, now the middle six chapters, Krishna is going to talk about his nature. Who is God? What is God? What is definition of God? And what is God's role in this whole creation? So, the first six chapters talk about Jiva Swarupa. Now, Krishna will talk about Ishvara Swarupa. What is the nature of Ishvara? Nature of God. And the second topic, since the first six chapters spoke about Karma Yoga as a sadhana, now the middle six chapters will speak about Upasana Yoga as a sadhana. Upasana, which has two words, Upa and Asana. Asana means to sit. Upa means near. Sit near means what? How do you sit near to God? How do you sit at His feet? Mind to bring it to God. Not physically bring yourself near to God. Because you can be sitting in a temple, but mind can be somewhere else. So when we say Upasana, it does not deal with the physical body. It means, how do I bring my mind nearer to God? So these six chapters are soaked with devotion. How to bring about that loving devotion towards God. Thus, we must understand the difference between bhakti and upasana. Because many people mix up the word bhakti and upasana. Since upasana means prayers, rituals, chanting of mantras, everything to bring our mind closer to God, then what is bhakti? What is the difference with bhakti then?
Devotion.
It's called devotion, but how does bhakti then differ from upasana?
Bhakti is upasana. Upasana is a process.
Sorry? You saying something?
Prayers.
Okay. Okay. And upasana?
It's intellectual.
So you think bhakti is more physical,
right?
And upasana is more mental. Okay. So in chapter 12, the word bhakti is clarified for us. What bhakti actually means is, when I have devotion to God, whatever karma I do, action I do, with devotion to God, my karma becomes what? Karma Yoga. If I don't have devotion to God, whatever action I do is very mechanical. It is not Karma Yoga, it doesn't bring me towards God. So when I have love and devotion for God, whatever action I do, that karma becomes Karma Yoga. When I have devotion and love for God, whatever prayers, rituals I do, whatever mantras I chant, upasana becomes?
Upasana
Yoga. It unites me with God. And when there is bhakti in knowledge, when I am studying the scriptures, with utter love and devotion for God, my jnana becomes?
Jnana
Yoga. So bhakti must be there, the love and devotion for God must be there in karma, it must be there in upasana, it must be there in jnana. That's what we must understand. Bhakti is the crux of everything. If there is no bhakti, all our efforts go to waste. How to cultivate that bhakti, Krishna will explain in these six chapters also. So bhakti is at different levels. And bhakti also, the love for God also can be different. Some people have love for God because they have an Ishta Devata. They have a particular ideal which they favor. So that is also one form of bhakti. Some people also have love for God at a higher level. What is the higher level? What is the higher level?
One I have form? Huh? Or without form?
No, that is still higher. What is in between? One, I have love for God. I see God in the idol which I worship. In all creation. I can see God's presence in all creation. So I can love all and serve all. Right? To me, every creature is a manifestation of God. Every human being is a manifestation of God. And then beyond that is what we call having love for the unmanifested nature of God. So it is also bhakti at different levels. All are also valid forms of bhakti.
Eka, anika?
Eka rupa bhakti, anika rupa bhakti and arupa bhakti. Right? Eka rupa bhakti means one form. Anika rupa, many forms. Arupa, formless. So bhakti also can take different, what we call levels also. So the second sadhana, the second thing is the sadhana which is highlighted is upasana. Now, karma yoga is cross level. We use our body to be in service of God. Upasana is at subtle level. We are using our mind to move it closer to God. So, from gross we move to subtle. So, all three, you see, karma yoga addresses the body, upasana yoga addresses the mind, jnana yoga, which is in the last six chapters, will address the intellect. So BMI, body, mind, intellect, all three are taken care of. And what is the third subject which will be highlighted in this little six chapters is Ishvara Anugraha. Ishvara Anugraha means grace of God is a very important factor in the spiritual journey. Although we may say, I you say karma yoga, I have to do effort, then why should I bother about God's grace? Which means what? You only said what? Karma yoga, self effort, your own effort, then why should I bother about God's grace? Why should I seek God's grace? To remain humble, isn't it? Right? Humility must be there. Oh Lord, I would put in my effort, but I also back for your grace also, right? We should not be arrogant. Be confident, but don't be arrogant, right? So put in effort, invoke the grace of Ishvara. That's why you put in effort to come to this class, right? You put in all your effort to come to this class. Then what do you do? Before you start the class, you say some prayers. Because why? To invoke the grace of Ishvara. So I put in the effort, I come here, but I would like to invoke your grace so that I listen with your bhakti also, right? So we say a prayer to invoke the grace of Ishvara. So therefore we take the middle path. If I say only my effort is important, that is being arrogant. If I surrender totally to my faith, that is fatalism. But we take the middle path. I put in my effort, but I understand the law of karma can take effect. Therefore, I invoke your grace to help me through this process. So the middle path is the best path. Now, these are the three main topics that will be covered in this middle six chapters. We won't touch the last three topics until we come to chapter 13. So we'll take that up later. Okay. Now, with this understanding, let us get into chapter 7. So now in chapter 7, let's see. Now the first three verses, and this chapter is called Jnana Vijnana Yoga. Jnana is what? Knowledge. Vijnana? Wisdom. What's the difference between knowledge and wisdom?
Knowledge is information.
Knowledge is information.
Wisdom is transformation.
Wisdom is transformation. Then knowledge must lead to transformation. Knowledge is what you get by hearing, listening. Wisdom is what you get by contemplation. So knowledge, somebody can give you knowledge, but wisdom nobody can give you. You have to cultivate that wisdom. But this chapter is Krishna saying there is going to be knowledge and there is going to be wisdom. There will be information, there will be transformation also. So the first three verses, Krishna is going to introduce the subject matter of chapter 7. What is he going to discuss in chapter 7? So let us look at the first verse. Okay, look at the third line. He says, Samagrahma Nyasyasi. Nyasyasi is in the fourth line. Samagrahmam Nyasyasi. Nyasyasi means telling Arjuna, you will know me. Mam means me, meaning Krishna. Samagrah in full. In totality you will know me. I am going to reveal myself now to you. What is the totality of God? So he says, if you follow my teachings, you will understand the knowledge of my nature. Right? Now, what do we mean by knowing God in full? What do you mean by knowing God in full? What is it by saying here, you will know me in full? Later on, he will explain that God has got two natures. One is called the lower nature. Nature is Prakriti. Lower is Apara. Apara Prakriti is the word is going to be used. Lower nature. What is lower nature of Lord? It is the visible, physical nature of Lord. The Lord that we experience with our five senses. For example, we worship Lord Rama, Lord Krishna, Lord Ganesha or Devi, whatever form we worship. So that is considered as the lower nature of God, Apara Prakriti, which has got form, shape, size, color, etc. Which is how the majority of people worship God. So Krishna says this visible, physical, tangible form is my lower nature, which is subject to arrival and departure, which is subject to time and place. That God that you worship in your altar is only at your altar, is not somewhere else. So it is a limited form of God. Then Krishna says, so that is what we call Saguna Swarupa. Saguna means the form. Guna is what we call attributes. Saguna means with attributes, a God with attributes. And normally we use the word Ishvara. When we talk about a God with form, the word Ishvara generally is to refer to any God with form. Okay? So Saguna Swarupa. And then he will tell Arjuna, I have a higher nature. The lower is called Apara Prakriti, the higher is called Para Prakriti. You just remove the A from there. So you have Para Prakriti, higher nature. What is that higher nature? He will say it is intangible. It is invisible, eternal, all-pervading nature, which is also called in Sanskrit as Nirguna. The lower one is called Saguna, the higher one is called Nirguna, or Para Prakriti. So Krishna says, only when you know both, only when you know my lower nature and my higher nature, then your knowledge of Ishvara is complete. You will know me in full. So both we must know, lower and higher nature. And Krishna says, I will explain to you both of this. And not only that, such a way, such a great teachers, Krishna, he says, asamshayam, without any doubt, there won't be any doubt in your mind. Such clear teachings are going to be given that there is no doubt in your mind what is the lower and higher nature of God. Now, although Krishna is the greatest guru, and he says, the teachings I impart to you, you will have no doubt, but still he wants to protect himself. So, in order to protect himself, he says what? Although I will give you this knowledge to remove doubts, you also must have one quality. What is that quality?
Faith.
Faith. Faith. What else?
Surrender.
Surrender. So he says here, look at the first line, Maya Sakta Manaha. Maya Sakta Manaha. Manaha, your mind must be asaktaha, must be fixed on who? On me. You should have desire to know me. If you do not have any desire for this knowledge, what will happen? You won't come back for next class. Isn't it? Well, you'll be bored of listening. So there must be some thirst to know about God also. No doubt God is the greatest teacher, but his teachings can only work if you also have that thirst for the knowledge to know God in totality also. So therefore you must have interest, then only you will attain this knowledge. That's why there is a text written by Adi Shankaracharya called Atma Bodha. Very short text. I think some 60 over verses. But in the very first verse, and Atma Bodha itself means what? Bodha means knowledge. Atma means of the soul, of Atman. Knowledge of Atman. And before Shankara writes the, give us the knowledge of what is Atman, in the very first verse he says, I am writing this Atma Bodha for people who have four qualities. If you don't have these four qualities, better you don't waste time reading. And what are the four qualities? First, you must have Shina Papanam. Papanam, Papanam, Papanam means sins. Shina means you must have purified yourself of all these sins. Now, what is the sins? What do you mean by purify yourself of all these
sins?
All the negative qualities in your mind, you should have removed this dirt first from your mind. All jealousy, pride, anger, ego, etc. You must have cleansed your mind. How? First you have gone through the, what we call the performance of austerities, through japa, through prayers and rituals. First you must have cleansed your mind first. Second, shantana. Shantana means you must have some calmness, some tranquility of mind. So again, you have perfected yourself through prayers, rituals, through seva, etc. And living a disciplined life, you have come to this stage where your mind is focused and clean. Vitaragina. Vitaragina means one who has freed himself from raga. Vita means to have victory over raga. Raga means excessive cravings and desires for the world. Otherwise, you come for classes here, but your mind is running away all everywhere outside. So you have already freed yourself from the clutches of worldly desires. And fourth very important quality, mumukshana. Mumukshana means you must have desire for moksha. If you have no desire for moksha, then don't waste your time coming to know what is the atma. So that's why Shankara also says you have to qualify yourself first before you start reading this. So you have to evaluate yourself and see whether you have these qualities. And same thing Krishna is saying here, Mai Sakta Manaha. Is God, when we talk about, he says, mind attached to me means, is God the destination of your life? Is God the goal of your life? If God is the goal of your life, then you will find these teachings very, very interesting. Very relevant to your thoughts. So Arjuna, fix your mind on me, keep me as your ultimate destination, and then you will put in the right effort also to gain this knowledge. Now, you may ask, yes, Now, the thing is, you may ask, if God is the goal of my life, what about all my worldly goals? Do I forget everything? So what happens to all my duties, my worldly goals? I show me other interests also. What happens to all that? You still have to. So what happens to all these goals? Then things, you treat them as secondary goals of life. You don't give priority to those goals and what we call shunt away your spiritual goals. So you have to have a healthy growth. Have those worldly desires, have the worldly goals, at the same time cultivate your spiritual goal. But do not let your spiritual goal be overcome by the worldly goals. So normally, that's why the first thing, it's so easy to give up coming for Gita classes, isn't it? One invitation for one party comes suddenly, what happens? What is the first thing you give up? Party, Gita class. No need to think. So there are of course a lot of interruptions in our life, that there are a lot of hurdles for us to progress, but we have to understand what I want to be prior to. So maya sakta manaha and thus yogam yujan. Yogam yujan is the second line. Yujan means to practice yoga. Yoga means all the required sadhanas. Karma yoga sadhana, upasana yoga, shravanam, listening to this knowledge, keep on practicing all this. So, depending on whatever your level, carry on your effort also. And thus, Krishna says, not only should you practice, therefore these are the qualities you should have. Fix your mind on me, make me your goal of life, put all the sadhanas into practice, and number three, mat ashrayaha. Mat ashrayaha means seek refuge in me. Surrender to me. Seek the grace of God. As I said, our self-effort is important, but at the same time we must always invoke the grace of God. So mat ashrayaha means sharanagati. Be humble and surrender to me. Therefore, these are the three qualities Krishna says. If you have these three qualities, then whatever teachings I am going to give you here, you will understand it very well and you will know me in full. So, therefore Krishna says now, what should you do now? What is the next step? What is the next step? You surrender, you set your goals, what should you do now? Okay, the last line he says, Tap Shrunu, now you listen. So if you are serious about his knowledge, you have put in all the effort, now be ready to listen, pay attention. Okay? So, now let us see what he says about this knowledge in verse number 2. So now Krishna has said that both Saguna Ishvara and Nirguna Ishvara, knowledge both is important and both is going to impart to us. Now, to know Saguna Ishvara is called Jnana. Remember the title of this chapter is Jnana Vijnana. So, to know the form, the Ishvara with form, Saguna Ishvara is called Jnana. To know the formless is called Vijnana. That formless you can only know by your own contemplation. So knowledge will be given to you of both, but you can easily know the form with knowledge, but to understand the formless you will have to do a lot of your own contemplations. So that's why it's called jnana and vijnana, knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom means when you have understood the unmanifest nature, the higher nature of God. So Krishna says here, aham jnanam vijnanam vakshyami. Vakshami means I shall now impart to you, I shall tell you what? Both jnanam and vijnanam. I shall impart to you knowledge and wisdom. That means you will know my lower and higher nature, my manifest and unmanifest nature. Now, at the manifest nature, what is the difference? At manifest nature, the devotee and God, there is a division, isn't it? When we come to manifest nature of God, To us, God is somewhere else, or God is something other than us. When we come to unmanifest nature of God, when you elevate yourself to that, at that level, there is no more distance between God and devotee. God and devotee become one. Because what is the nature of God? Sachit Ananda. What is the nature of the devotee? Sachit Ananda. So therefore, the devotee and God become one. What very important to know that in order to come to the unmanifest nature, we first have to start with mind. Just like let's say the ocean is somewhere far away. You cannot see the ocean is somewhere far away. How do you get to the ocean? How do you find your way to the ocean? Follow the river. What is the nature of the river? Somebody say use compass. Or nowadays go GPS. So what is the nature of the river? The river contains water. What is the nature of the ocean? It contains water. So from that known you go to the unknown. From the river you go to the ocean. From the manifest you lead to the unmanifest. So, at that level, when you look at God and yourself as one, just like looking at wave and ocean, why do we see a difference between wave and ocean? Why do we say this is wave and this is ocean? Why do you distinguish? What is the difference between wave and ocean? You distinguish based on what? By size, by shape, right? Because ocean has got different size and shape, wave has got its own form and shape. So you distinguish it. But if you really look at it in reality, what is the difference between ocean and wave? It's what is the same as water. So when you look upon the world with different shape, form, sizes, you see plurality. But if you learn to see that essence and whole operation, then you see beyond plurality. You only see that one essence. So when you go beyond name and form. So here Krishna says, I will tell you about that jnanam and vijnanam and asesataha. Asesataha means in detail, thoroughly. And Krishna says, then yach jnanva neha bhuyo nyach jnatavyam avashishyate. Having gained this knowledge, once you gain this knowledge about the totality of God, he says there is nothing else more to know. There is no more knowledge beyond this. That means that is the highest knowledge. Once you understand God in totality, manifest and unmanifest. And you will get total satisfaction, all your levels of satisfaction will be totally resolved. Now if you look at it, right now we also experience satisfaction in this samsara, in this world. And how do we experience this world? Generally, there are three levels at how we experience this world. The first level is when we experience this world in a gross manner. So on a physical level we experience this world. There are people who only talk all the time about their physical pain, the body, the pains of their body. They talk about their illness, their sickness, they talk about death. So our experience of samsara is normally at this level, right? At the very closest level. The second level is there are people who are not bothered about their physical problems, but they say that physically I'm okay, everything is okay, but what do they lack? They don't have insecurity about their physical self, but what do they lack? Emotional security, isn't it? Emotional security is what? They say my health is good, children are well settled, but they don't spend time with me, isn't it? So there is thirst. some people at physical level, some people have needs at emotional level also. Emotional deprivation, need for love, need for care, need for companionship. So as long as you depend on external factors for your emotional fulfillment, what happens? You are known as a samsari. Samsari means one who depends on samsara, the world, for my emotional satisfaction, for my emotional happiness. The first one is physical, this one is what we call emotional. The third type is even more subtle. The need is not physical, the need is not emotional, but the need is at an intellectual level. That is what? I have a refined mind, I have many questions I want to know about nature, about universe, about God, about consciousness, what is the purpose of life, isn't it? A lot of us have this intellectual thirst. But once Krishna says you get this knowledge and understand the totality, your physical questions, your emotional dependence, your intellectual dependence, everything will be answered. Everything will be very clearly understood. What is your concept? What is your role in this world? What is the role of God in this life and how to get it from? So all your needs, your physical, emotional and intellectual needs will be taken care of. Now, we come to verse number 3. So, difference in jnanam and vijnanam, as we said earlier, knowledge is external. Knowledge is external, which is gained by listening. Wisdom is internal, gained by reflection. So we have to keep this in mind. And very important to know that there are two types of knowledge. One is called the self-knowledge, knowledge of the self, which is known as higher knowledge. So when we are talking here about knowledge, we are talking about higher knowledge, knowledge of the self. And all other type of knowledge is known as apara, that's lower knowledge. Knowledge of the self is known as para, higher knowledge. All other knowledge that you have is known as apara or lower knowledge. Now why is the difference? Why is there a distinction? This is what the Upanishads say. They classify knowledge as lower knowledge and higher knowledge. Higher knowledge is only knowledge of the self. All other knowledge that you have, that means knowledge about science, chemistry, physics, mathematics, even knowledge about prayers, rituals is all called lower knowledge. Now why is there a distinction between this lower and higher knowledge? Why the difference? Why the classification of it?
Because the higher knowledge is absolute knowledge.
Right. And higher knowledge is about the absolute eternal moksha. Whereas all other knowledge, including knowledge about rituals and prayers, will still keep you bound to this earth. When you do all sorts of prayers and rituals, what you are seeking is back again is some kind of worldly enjoyments. So even knowledge that you gain in school, college, is basically knowledge about the changing world. Only knowledge about Atman is about the unchanging, eternal, imperishable. That's why it is segregated as lower and higher knowledge. It does not mean that lower knowledge is not important. We need that for our daily survival. But we also have to come to the higher knowledge also. So since higher knowledge deals with abstract, formless, it is not easy. Therefore, we have to go through lower knowledge first, then come to higher knowledge. Now, here in the next verse, Krishna will talk about why is this knowledge, if this knowledge is so important and it leads us to the higher, to the imperishable, to moksha, why is it that many people are not interested? Since this higher knowledge is so important, why is it that, and that was a question somebody just asked, why is it that people are not interested? And the reason here Krishna will speak about is that majority of people are busy pursuing what? Karma and Artha. Out of the four goals of life, Dharma, Karma, Artha, Moksha, they are mainly interested in pursuing Karma and Artha. So So much so that even prayers and rituals are used for what? Not for gaining moksha, but for gaining more karma and more art. So even the prayers and rituals are brought down to this level. They are only interested in seeking more karma and art. Very few people are interested to pursue the goal of moksha also. And many people don't even know how to get this knowledge. Now there was a story I was reading that man who was performing austerities, he wanted to get some boons from Lord Brahma. So he performed various austerities and Lord Brahma was very pleased. He came in front of the devotee and said, ask whatever you want. So the devotee said, I would need three things to ask. I won't ask you more than three, only three things. So, but only one condition, I reserve the right to ask you the three things when I want. Brahma said, okay, when you already called me. So some weeks later, he invoked Brahma again. He said, now I want to ask the three things. So Brahma came, asked. He said, first, I have a lot of pains in my body. Remove the pains. Brahma said, okay, done. Second wish is, I want to have good, delicious food to eat. Okay, sure, okay, done also. Third wish is, I wish to have three more wishes that I can ask you the next time. So, he said, okay, now you are stuck already, you already granted him that, so he gave him another three wishes. So again, after a few weeks, he called him. He said, now I have to ask you the three wishes. One, please make my family happy and healthy and prosperous. He said, done. Number two, he said, I am not happy with my job. Bless me so I get another job with more pay. Also done. What is the third? Three more wishes which I'll ask you the next time. So this is what basically all of us, majority of people are involved in this. Going from, for prayers and rituals for what? For more karma, for more artha. For more karma, for more artha. How many people want to come to moksha? So here in verse number 3, Krishna says, Manushyanam sahasreshu. Manushyanam, among the whole population, among thousands, sahasa means thousands and thousands of people, kashchit is a very, very rare one rare individual among the thousands, yatati, they make efforts. Here he's not even talking about moksha, they just put in the effort, just to come for Gita class. Put in the effort. Out of thousands, one out of thousand just put in the effort. Right? And he says for what? To get this knowledge for what? Siddhaye. Siddhaye means for perfection. To reach the state of perfection. Perfection means what? We are not seeking external freedom. We are seeking what? Internal freedom. That security we are seeking is not from the world. This individual who puts in the effort is not seeking security from the world. He is seeking security from God, from eternal. So, one out of a thousand just puts in the effort. And then he says, Siddhanam, among the thousands who put in the effort, Yatatam was striving for going the right direction. Okay? They have understood the problem is not external, the problem is internal. Okay? They are, out of these thousands of people who put in effort, out of them also, Kashchi, the one very rare one, will succeed. So you can see that there are thousands putting in. Out of thousands, one out of thousand is what? 1%. 1% of 1,000 is how many? 100, right? So out of 1,000 people, 100 are putting in the effort. Out of this 100, 1% out of the 100 means how many? 1. 1% only succeed to Vishnu. Why? Because the spiritual path requires persistence, it requires sacrifice, it requires commitment, and therefore not everybody is ready to put in that effort. And many people start with a lot of enthusiasm, start everything very nicely, but then because of various factors, they give up halfway. So there are three factors that can always affect our progress. You must understand this. One is called Kala, which is time. The other is Desa. Desa means the environment that we are born in also, can also affect our spiritual progress. And the third is Prarabdha, which means the karmas that we carry forward from the past birth. So one has got to put in a lot of dedication, a lot of effort to fight all these obstacles in life also. Therefore, Krishna says this very one, the rare individual, Vedi, he knows Tatvataha, he knows me in reality, he comes to know me in totality. So you can see that it is not a easy path, right? Not everybody is ready for it, not everybody has the commitment and the dedication to keep up to this path, to come to this kind of knowledge. So now, what is this knowledge? Now Krishna will reveal himself in this verses 4 onwards. What is this nature of God? The lower and higher nature of God. Now before we go into these verses, we have to understand one thing. That how the Upanishads define God. God in the Upanishads is defined as Jagat Karana. Jagat means the world. Karana means cause. God is defined as the very cause of the whole universe. Now, if you think about it, in order to create anything, you need two things. Whatever you want to create, you need two things. What are the two things?
Raw materials.
You need the raw material. Supposing you want to create a wooden table, first thing you need is the wood as a raw material. Then what else do you need?
Knowledge.
The knowledge how to create. So there must be an intelligence force and there must be the raw material. Anything, whatever you want to create, right? Now, therefore, when we talk about intelligent cause of creation, in Sanskrit it's called Nimitta Karana, N-I-M-I-T-A. Nimitta Karana means the intelligent cause for creation, which is God. And then you need raw material to create the creation that is called Upadana Karana, U-P-A-E-A-N-A, Upadana Karana, which is the material, right? Now, if at the beginning of creation, if God alone was there, where did the material come from? Where did nature come from? Before the creation came about, only God was there, only consciousness was there. Where did the material create the creation come from? See, you are saying the carpenter also has the material in him also to create. The goldsmith had the gold in him to create. Does it sound logical? He's a creator, correct? He's an intelligent cause of creation. But where did he get the material? How did he create it? From out of nowhere? So let us look at a practical example. You want to create a table? The carpenter has got to go and take material from somewhere and create a table. You want to create ornaments? The goldsmith has got to take gold from somewhere and create it. God wanted to create the world. Where did the materials go? So, how do you accept that God is both the intelligent cause of creation and the material cause of creation? Right, this is what we must understand. So, we must not take everything at face value, right? We have to question these things also. Since you don't question, I'm throwing the question. So, how can God be both the intelligent and material cause of creation? And this is where the Upanishads come in to help us by giving us three practical examples in the world to understand that it is possible to have the same one source of intelligent and material source of creation. Whereas if you look at anything in creation, it needs an intelligent source and a material source, right? Which is not one and the same. But within his creation, there are three things that will help us to understand that one can be the cause of both. So the three examples given to us are, like the spider spins the web. Where does the spider get the web from? From within himself. He can spin the web from him. He does not have to go out and get the materials for the web. Second example is, like the seed becomes a tree. The seed is the intelligent and the material cause of the creation of the tree. It does not have to go and take the material from outside. And third example is, like the skin produces hair, which comes also from within. So therefore, God is both the intelligent and the material cause of the skin. Skin produces hair. So three examples are given to us in the Mundaka Upanishad to help us explain and understand that God can be both the intelligent and material cause of creation. Now therefore, next question is, what is the nature of such a God? And the Upanishads again point out that Lord has got two principles. Both these two principles put together is considered the creation. And here in the Gita, the technical terms we use as para prakriti, higher principle, and apara prakriti, lower principle. Both of them put together is called Ishvara, the creation. Now we have to understand another thing. What is the difference between para and apara? Since both come from God, para also comes from God, apara also comes from God, what is the difference in para and apara? So there are some common features and there are some uncommon features. Okay. What are the common features? First understand, here, so what is para prakriti? Is consciousness. What is apara prakriti? Is matter. Both the consciousness and matter have come from God. But between consciousness and matter there is a difference and there is similarity also. Now first of all, what is the common feature? You must understand both consciousness and matter are beginningless. They are eternal. Now why do we say they are neither created nor destroyed? Consciousness we know is not created nor destroyed. What about matter? It is said that even matter is not created nor destroyed. So how come matter is not created nor destroyed? This whole creation, in fact our bodies also, is matter, is prakriti. But what the scriptures are saying, that also is eternal. Why is that? This body is made of five elements, right? When this body is, what we call it, undergoes death, the five matters, materials, go back again to seed form. And when the next, what we call creation comes about, from the seed, again the same matter comes up. So that's why matter also is eternal. It is never destroyed. Just like ice, when it melts, what does it become? Water. Ice is not destroyed. It changes form to water. When you heat water, it becomes steam. So it is never destroyed. It only changes from one to another form. You cannot destroy matter also. So matter also is eternal. Consciousness also is eternal. Now, what are the uncommon features? First one is, consciousness has got life. It is called Chetana Tattva. It is called life. Whereas, matter is called Achetana Tattva. It is inert. It has got no life at all. That is the first difference between para prakriti and apara prakriti. The second is, consciousness in its pure form has got no attributes. That's why we call it Nirguna. It does not have color, sound, form, shape, size, nothing. Consciousness is like space. It has got no properties at all. whereas matter, saguna, has got all kinds of attributes. It has got size, it has got shape, it has got form, it has got color, etc. Therefore, consciousness cannot be studied. Nobody can point to you and tell you, this is consciousness. Consciousness is like this. Because it is without any attributes. Okay? Third is, consciousness is free from all modifications. It cannot undergo any modification. The Atma or the consciousness in us cannot have any modifications, whereas all the body, the matter level goes through all kinds of modification. The body goes through modification, the mind goes through modification, everything in nature goes through modifications. And the fourth difference is, consciousness is said to be satyam. That's why Adi Shankaracharya said the very famous words, Brahma satyam, jagat mithyam. Brahma is real, the whole jagat is false. What it means is that consciousness is satyam. It means consciousness can exist independently. Whereas matter is dependent on consciousness. Matter cannot exist without consciousness. So consciousness is independent existence, it's called satyam. Matter is called mithya, or it depends on consciousness for its existence. And when we put these two together, it is called Ishvara. Okay? And the whole cause of creation. So now, we'll come back next week and look at these verses 4 and 5 to understand the lower and higher nature of God. Once we've understood what is the difference between consciousness and matter. We end with the prayer. Vasudeva Sudam Devam Kansa Chandra.